Good morning and welcome to MTSU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. The MTSU Public History Program has a wonderful exhibit in the works. It is a work in progress because at this point they are collecting items from the community here in Rutherford County that are representative of World War II, all kinds of memorabilia, as well as oral interviews from members of the public, their remembrances of that critical period in American history. And here to talk with us about it today are Dr. Brendan Martin, who is a professor of history at MTSU, and two of his students in the Essentials in Museum Management class, Ashley Staley of Nashville by way of Pleasant View, and Catherine Merzbacher. Thanks for being with us, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bren, what kinds of memorabilia would you like? Are we talking war material? Are we talking home front material like WPA posters? What exactly are you looking for?
The focus of the exhibit is primarily on the home front here in Rutherford County, and so we're looking for any sort of memorabilia on the impact on civilians back here at home. So that would include anything related to the rationing, the war bond campaigns, the Red Cross activities here at home, along with Blue Star and Gold Star banners that families would post on their houses to indicate that they had family members who were abroad in the military.
What about if they didn't spend their World War II years here in Rutherford County, so it's not necessarily indicative of the home front in the county during that period of time? Is that still okay?
Well, I think it depends. If we can relate it back to the county in some respect, or if it's an example of what people may have been using here in the county, then certainly, yeah, we'd be open to things that aren't from people that were living in Rutherford County at that time.
And what kinds of reminiscences are you looking for in the oral history interviews? Again, it focused on the home front, but what kinds of particular areas do you think it would be worthwhile for folks to discuss with you?
Well, fortunately, there's already a very strong oral history collection over at the Gore Research Center, which is one of our partners for this project. And so we're going to be drawing a lot on those existing oral history collections that they have. But beyond that, we're looking for oral histories of people who have memories of, you know, what was taking place here in Rutherford County in terms of maybe the military maneuvers, again, some of the other civilian activities that I just discussed a moment ago. But we're also looking for stories from people who came here just after the war, people who maybe came to what was then MTSC on a GI Bill, who then became active members of this community.
In the process of so doing, you might actually run into some additional names that could go on to our Veterans Memorial here.
Absolutely, yes.
Let me ask Catherine, what attracted you to this project? I mean, you're taking the course, but as you have gotten into it this semester, what appeals to you about it?
I think the most appealing feature for me is the local history element. Being from Nashville and having close ties to the Mid-South community in general, just the local focus. And in learning in the class, I think the one thing that the class has really come to kind of view was this pervasiveness of the way that this just impacted everyone. Women, you know, black and white people, the elderly, children. All the civilian activities that were going on here in Rutherford County during this time really demonstrate just this overall picture of patriotism and sacrifice that involved all the citizens really in a way that to me is just not known in this period. So I think that's most what attracted me and kind of pulled me into this project.
Do you see a difference between that saturation effect, that immersion effect of a whole society into a war effort, between that and the wars of your generation or my generation, Vietnam, Desert Storm, where participation or the impact is more on the fringes of society or a certain segment of society?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I think, you know, the general thread that kind of binds everyone together in any type of war is the support, obviously, of the troops and of our brave people that go to fight and protect our country. But I do see definite differences in, you know, just the rationing people had to deal with, the, you know, the sacrifices and the giving up of, you know, you could only have this amount of sugar, you could only have this amount of meat. I mean, that's just not something that we are having to deal with, fortunately, you know. But just the way that everyone pulled together back then to sacrifice, to make sure that they could have the best materials and the best everything. Luckily, nowadays, you know, we don't have to do that, but I feel like that is, kind of the appeal for me with this, was just understanding how different everything was mm-hmm. back then.
Ashley, what sort of an approach are you all going to take to the actual handling of the materials once you get a hold of them? I mean, are you learning about how to care for them, certain kinds of light, certain kinds of temperature, mm-hmm. that kind of thing?
Definitely. We've been discussing that in our classes, proper care for your collections and artifacts. We'll be reviewing those, making sure they're applicable for our collection and for what our themes are for the exhibit. And then hopefully we'll be able to display them at the Heritage Center where the exhibit will first open.
This is the Heritage Center of Murfreesboro and Rutherford County that is on College Street here in Murfreesboro.
Correct.
Are these going to be part of a permanent collection? Are these going to be permanent donations, or will you be giving the artifacts back to the individuals after the exhibit's over?
They will be on loan to us. They will not, you know, necessarily give us the artifacts. We'll just be using them for the six-month period at the Heritage Center.
Okay. Brendan, why World War II in particular? I mean, the Civil War has been examined with a fine-tooth comb in this neck of the woods, especially in this county with the Battle of Stones River and everything. Why World War II, the focus?
Well, this decision was made with Dr. West, actually. Dr. Van West, who's the director of the Center for Historic Preservation, which also administers the Heritage Center downtown. And he and I sat down, it's been more than a year ago, and as we were brainstorming on some local history exhibit ideas, we both agreed that World War II is an important turning point in some ways for the history of this county. You know, up until World War II, this was a county that relied almost exclusively on agriculture in terms of economic development. There was some industry, but there wasn't a great deal. World War II, not only are we seeing a tremendous jump in terms of individual people's income during this time period, but we're also seeing major economic transitions in terms of the character of the local economy. But it also goes deeper than that. You also have some significant social impacts as well, particularly when you take a look at the African-American community here in Rutherford County. We're noticing that some of the people that served as soldiers during the war then came back and became leaders in the local civil rights movement.
Are you finding, as was the case on a national level, that the African-American soldiers came back feeling empowered because they had made a difference and they had been able to perhaps achieve a certain kind of status in the military hierarchy by going up through the ranks and then coming home being treated the same old way, as it were, and saying to themselves, "Now, just a damn minute, I fought and bled for my country. This will not do." That's a whole sea change, isn't it?
Absolutely, you know, and for many people, you know, both black and white in this community, this was the first time that many of them had left not just the county or the state or the region, but the country. And so many people, you know, particularly African Americans that were in France, were able to see firsthand with their own eyes, you know, a very different attitude towards race, and they come back to the United States, as you put it, empowered with the idea that, you know, we need to make change within our own community.
How much of this class is learning about the acquisition and care of artifacts, and how much of it is actually about learning history? Do you guys have to come to the class already with a certain amount of prep in your head about World War II, or are you still learning about the period as you go along? How much is there a percentage, or is it all blended together?
I been in the program for a while now, so for me it kind of all blends together anyway. But they're definitely, I wouldn't say it's quite 50-50, but we definitely are continuing to learn about the period in the class. However, I would say the majority of the class is devoted to learning about how to care for these objects, the collections mm-hmm. management, how to, you know, best practices for putting an exhibit together. Mm-hmm. But I mean, obviously, you have to be well-grounded in the history of this mm-hmm. to do it. A lot of it comes from background that we've had in other courses. A lot of it comes from research that has been done by fellow colleagues in the program before us on these topics. And a lot of it comes from individual research assignments that we do within the class.
Do the two of you, Katie and Ashley, have members of your families who have their own World War II experiences that perhaps they told you about when they were little kids or told your parents about and then your parents passed on to you? We'll start with you, Ashley.
Sure. Definitely my grandmother told me about her experiences during World War II as a little girl and dealing with rationing and how that impacted her family. Their meals would have to be planned around what was available through their ration stamps. And she also actually has one of her rationing booklets, so I've been able to actually see that and learn directly from a primary source. Mm-hmm. So definitely had an impact on me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Katie?
Yeah, I've grown up learning about this. Both my grandfathers fought in World War II. My grandfather, Jerry Herbert, fought under Patton, and he was a medic, and I've heard many, many regaling tales of, you know, really his heroism in helping, you know, the injured soldiers. My other grandfather, David Mersbacher, was stationed in England, actually, and helped build the airplanes. So I've heard different stories. He came back and actually lives in Tullahoma and worked at the Air Force Base there.
Mm-hmm. What did Jerry Herbert tell you about the Patton demeanor? Does it live up to the legend?
From his tales, it does. Yeah, it does.
And anything on the home front? Did their wives tell you anything about what they went through while their husbands were away?
You know, we didn't really. Unfortunately, one of my grandmothers passed away before I was born. But Grandma didn't talk a lot about it. I think, you know, other than the fact of just her staying home, the difference is in, you know, her staying home, caring for the family, really, she didn't know my grandfather. She only met him after he came back from war. But I know that, you know, she helped a lot with, they lived in Cincinnati, actually, so we heard a lot of interesting stories, that being a largely German community and our family being German. We heard a lot of interesting stories related to, like, Victory Garden planting and things like that.
You talk about your family being German. I had read and studied that it was difficult for some German Americans during the Second World War on the home front because the Germans were one of the Axis powers that we were fighting. Did you hear any tales of discrimination or nastiness toward people because your last name was Mersbacher, even though you were loyal Americans?
Yeah, I didn't grow up hearing a lot of tales about that. My grandmother, who was I'm German on all sides. Her maiden name was Berg. So when they lived in Cincinnati, my grandmother went to school and learned English through the school system. My grandparents, my great-grandparents, only spoke German. But my grandmother never really told any tales of, you know, horrible discrimination against them or anything, fortunately.
Okay. Bryn, you've interviewed quite a number of people as a historian. Do you find people eager to talk about wartime, either on the home front or in the heat of battle, or is it too painful for some of them to want to remember?
I think people are eager to speak about their civilian experiences here on the home front. But when you try to get people to discuss the horrors of combat, that mm-hmm. is a much more difficult, much more touchy topic for people to be talking about. So yeah, that's mm-hmm. that's much more difficult mm-hmm. for people to openly discuss.
Is it hard for people to talk about on the home front, talk about losing their loved ones, getting that visit from a member of the military or that telegram from the War Department, your husband's dead, your son's dead?
It's still very raw to people, even, you know, some 65, 70 years later. And I have interviewed people who, you know, we've had to discussed that and had people, you know, break down and cry over that, you know, even many decades later over that.
I'd be interested to know how the community here in Rutherford County reacted when the soldiers came home, having had certain kinds of experiences that maybe good old country boys never thought they'd have in their entire lives, and getting a hold of some continental European sophisticated ideas that perhaps they wouldn't have known just living in Murfreesboro, and how the community reacted to those changing mores. Is that something you would like to explore, not only the during the World War II home front life, but the post-World War II, immediate post-World War II home front life?
Well, absolutely. One of the main points that we're trying to make with this is that World War II was an agent of modernization here mm-hmm. in the county. And part of that is, you're absolutely right, with the attitudes that people fostered both here and abroad, coming back home and wanting to bring about fundamental change.
I'm wondering if Rutherford County became any more internationalized after World War II, if perhaps maybe some... It became not just, the demographics changed at all, not just African-American and white, but some people married Italian girls, German girls, British girls, and brought them home. That might be something to look into.
We haven't found a lot of evidence of that yet, but what we have found is that with the military maneuvers, you know, there were nearly a million soldiers that came through Middle Tennessee on maneuvers from 1941 through 44. Mm-hmm. And we have found a number of instances in which young women from Middle Tennessee married men who were here on maneuvers. Mm-hmm. We also found a good bit of evidence of people that came here after the war in order to make this a residence, yeah. from other regions of the country, that is.
Were people from Tennessee conscious during the war of the fact that their very own Cordell Hull was instrumental during the Roosevelt administration as a member of the cabinet?
Oh, yes. You know, he was not only a prominent politician in Tennessee, but in the nation as well. So yes, people were aware of that.
What have you two learned so far, Katie and Ashley, that came as perhaps the biggest surprise to you that you didn't know before you took this class, even though you're both history majors? Is it hard?
I think I wasn't very familiar with the War Bond campaign, mm-hmm. so that's something I'm still definitely learning about. You hear a lot about rationing and military maneuvers and things like that. Mm-hmm. War Bonds to me was a little bit more unfamiliar, and so I was really surprised to learn that here in Rutherford County, they sold over $1 million in War Bonds during mm-hmm. that time period, and that's quite a bit of money. I would like to know what that transfers to today's amount, but $1 million yeah. dollars in 1945 is quite a bit. So
That's a lot of patriotism.
Definitely. And that really hit home to me was just the strength and the amount of patriotism and unity in Rutherford County.
Anything particular, Katie, stand out to you so far?
No, I would say, you know, I had heard in studying a lot about the different campaigns that went on, but I think just putting this exhibit together has just given me that bigger picture of how everything related to what was going on nationally, how, and really just, I never actually sat down and thought about how pervasive it was in the daily lives. I mean, their lives literally for years revolved around this process of buying war bonds and selling war bonds and rationing their food and, you know, victory gardens. And you look, the fellow students in the class that have done research in the D&J, multiple articles in the newspaper every single day just hammering this home. Just, you know, I guess I just hadn't really sat down and thought about how that would have affected people, everyone on their daily level. Yeah.
Katie mentioned the Daily News Journal, the newspaper. What are some of the other sources that you would be doing, be using for research in this project, Brent?
Well, there are a number of collections over at the Gore Research Center that we're looking at. One in particular is Eugene Sloan, who was a reporter for a Nashville newspaper, but he also wrote a book called Somewhere in Tennessee, where he followed around the Second Army during maneuvers here. And so that's an incredibly rich collection for us, both the documents as well as the photographs. We also are looking closely at the sidelines collection as well to see what was going on here on campus. And that turns out to be a really interesting story as well.
When it comes to the collection of artifacts, why do you think most people would save little tidbits of things like maybe unused rationing stamps or things like that from World War II? Why would they keep these home front items in a cedar chest? Is it what makes it that kind of remembrance special to them, special enough to them that they would save something like that decades later?
I think for the same reasons that you and I would do this, that this is a tangible piece of their life, that they do have maybe sometimes bittersweet memories of this period, but nonetheless, it is of sentimental significance to them, and so they hold on to it.
Perhaps also because it was a part of their formative years, their youth, and that period in the 20s where everything makes such a big impact on you.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
What about from the standpoint of teaching these students best practices for handling artifacts in a museum? What sorts of knowledge do you want them to be able to take out of it that they can use in their future careers if they go on to become curators somewhere, for example?
Well my whole philosophy of teaching museum studies is to learn through experience. And so that's one of the reasons why I think it's really important to have these, you know, really professional experiences for students. So the approach for this class, and by the way, this was a technique that I really borrowed or stole from a former PhD student named Brian Hackett, where each of the students has a particular role. Each one of them applied for a position on the exhibit team. Katie here is the project director. Ashley is responsible for marketing and PR with this, and so forth and so on. So each person has their role on this. And the idea is along the way that we're attempting to apply what is best professional practice for exhibit development, collections management, and museum education.
And this exhibit not only will be at the Heritage Center starting on April the 29th and will be there for a while, but you hope to take it to different locations around Rutherford County?
Yes, definitely. We've been contacting several public institutions and turned this into a traveling exhibit. And so far, the Limbaugh Library System and the County Courthouse have expressed interest in having the exhibit come to them. So that is something that will help us reach a broader audience than those that only come to the Heritage Center.
But I trust you'd also like to get it out to Smyrna and Laverne and Eagleville.
Yes.
And Christiana. Yeah, Miller's Grocery. There you go. There you go. Put it there. How big do you anticipate this collection being? Is it as big as it gets, or have you set yourself to some kind of a cap where, you know, we can handle X many artifacts or X many interviews and that's it?
Well, we definitely have to work with the space that's available for us at the Heritage Center. So unfortunately, we're not able to take everything that we would like. So we do have to be somewhat selective in what we choose that best fits the exhibit.
Mm-hmm. Do people take a different attitude toward oral interviews, Bren, than maybe they would? I mean, I've heard kids ever since I was a kid say, oh, dry, old, boring history book. Does this really make it more relatable if they're able to hear the voice or see the video of an individual who actually lived for a time? Does that make it history more relatable to someone who doesn't really get history?
There's no doubt about that. You know, it's one thing to read history in a book or a textbook, but then when you're actually sitting there at the foot of someone who's lived through this experience and they can recount to you that their own memories of it, it really does help to bring it to life, personalizes it, really puts a face on history in the process.
How do you intend on capturing? Do you intend to use both audio, video, or both in capturing the interviews with people?
Oh, for doing oral histories, will be audio.
Audio only.
Audio interviews. However, within the exhibit, we are going to have a multimedia component that we will have, you know, snippets of some of the oral histories. We've even discovered some video as well and some period music, too.
There any old 35mm film or anything like that somebody might have shot during the 40s?
Well, no, what I was referring to is that there is some video of when MacArthur came to visit here in 1951.
Oh,
and so we're considering perhaps putting that into our audiovisual component of this.
That would be, his wife was from Murfreesboro, wasn't
she? That's right, Jean Faircloth MacArthur.
Little bitty thing, short. I attended something she did with Barbara Bush in Norfolk years ago at the MacArthur Foundation up there. Tiny little lady, she used to call him my general. Is this the sort of thing that as you two look at your careers and you put together your resumes, is this the sort of thing that you're thinking future employers are going to look at this and see what you've done and go, wow, this is the kind of person I want in my museum or for my organization? Is that's what you're hoping to, part of what you're hoping to achieve?
Definitely. This combined with other projects that we've done in the public history program do help complete our resumes and actually let potential employers know that we have firsthand experience in putting together an exhibit and instead of, you know, only just being in a classroom learning from a textbook. So,
what kind of a job do you anticipate getting when you graduate, Ashley?
Definitely staying in the museum field, but perhaps taking a different aspect and working more closely with PR and marketing for historic sites. I feel like that's an important tool that's often overlooked. You can put together great exhibits, but if you don't know how to market it to the public, you may not have the visitors that you want. So,
would you rather work for a private sector concern, a nonprofit, for a government entity like the National Park Service, or does it matter?
Probably a nonprofit, but more on a city or county level. I don't have high aspirations of National Park Service.
Katie, what about you?
My background is in historic preservation, so this class is actually a little bit of a different shift for me, but it's a welcome one. I think that it is really important in today's job market to have as many different skill sets as you can have, and being well-grounded and, like Ashley said, having that actual experience of saying, yeah, I actually did this. I worked on this. I put it together, and I know how to do it, and I know the best way, you know, the best practices in today's field for how to do it.
Does it matter to you whether you work ultimately after graduation for a private concern, a nonprofit, or a governmental entity?
I probably would do more private. I'd like to get into consulting, probably more private, but I'm not closing my doors to anything at this point.
What sorts of jobs does a class like this prepare the students for, Bryn, ultimately after they graduate?
Well, it prepares them for really a wide array of careers within museums. One of the hottest areas within museums now is museum education. That is, you know, people who can not just, you know, just be tour guides, but also can do much more in terms of outreach to schools and homeschoolers by touching on what the curriculum standards are calling for. And that's actually part of this project as well.
So if people want to donate their home front items or tell their World War II home front tales to you for this project, what do they need to do?
Well, first of all, they would not be donated. They would be loaned
for
a six-month period of time. But if we had people out there that are willing to share their memories or their items for this exhibit, then they can contact me. Again, my name is Brendan Martin, and I do work in the Department of History. My phone number in my office is 898-2643. Or if someone would prefer email, I can be reached at cbmartin@mtsu.edu.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you all for being here with us today. And we would be remiss if we didn't also thank the Albert Gore Research Center and the Heritage Center of Murfreesboro in Rutherford County for cooperating and partnering with you in this project. This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com, and we are available on iTunes.